This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network. You're listening to Loving the Earth, Pollution-Free Rising. Joining us today is Tom Gagan. He's an Adirondack artist of tremendous abilities. It's just, I saw his work at the St. Lawrence County Arts Council's gallery, and it was just so striking, and it was the perfect kind of work for using to have this appealing, attractive, getting people's attention in a moment kind of artwork. And I just want Tom to introduce himself. Can you introduce yourself for us, Tom?
I'm Tom Gagan, and I'm totally unworthy of that hyperbolic introduction there by Don.
Tell us something about, you know, how did you get going in this? You know, a little, kind of personalize your paintings for us. You know, where did this all come from?
You mean the artwork?
Or your heart. Your artist heart, you know, where did that come from?
Well, I'll tell you, I was a special ed teacher in New York City for like 35 years. And during the summers, my wife and I used to go tenting around all over Canada and the United States with the kids. And so I spent a lot of time outdoors in various, environments. And then one day my wife, I think we were in Virginia someplace, just before the Blue Ridge Parkway, or just on it, and my wife bought me a little watercolor set, and I started painting at one of the picnic tables in the campground, and I believe that was in 1998 or something like that, and I've been painting pictures ever since.
Let's get a cool way to get started, I think, on a camping trip at a picnic table.
Yeah.
Like kind of outdoor, environmental kind of oriented artwork. Tell me a little, in being the special education teacher, it seems like, you know, you're already into education quite a lot. Do you feel there's any message in your artwork? Are you trying to educate people with it?
Well, basically what I do as an artist is entertain myself. The audience is primarily secondary to me. My interest is in creating colors. I like colors. I like looking at colors, and I like blowing up, you know, I like shocking colors, and I like so what these colors are to me are representations of what I see in nature. And as far as the connection between educating people, I mean, I spent my life in education, and I believe that education is the only way that we are going to be able to stop the slide we have into the disintegration of our planet and the human race. So education to me is, and I use color primarily to educate myself, because when I look at something now from as different from before I was painting, I look at stuff in a different way now. I look at the way things are put together, just like as a leaf is built like a house, and where's supports, and where's, you know, how the whole thing goes together. You start looking at things more closely and in detail as an artist. And that closeness and detail can be carried over into an examination by the general public of what exactly is happening to our species on this planet. You mentioned that you're with the Cancer Founder, Cancer Coalition, and you're interested in the correlation between environmental degradation and the prevalence of cancer. Well, from what I read about cancer, it seems to me that like 80% or some number around there of cancers are caused by pollutants. And actually, some of the pictures that I have painted, I don't know if I've shown them at all, but are of pollutants. What's good about pollutants to me is that they have good colors a lot of time. Or petroleum based has like vivid colors. But vivid colors are the very thing in that sense that are destroying many people on this planet.
Well, I'm just so happy, truly, to hear your, I don't know you all that well. I really appreciate your artwork, and I love the fact that you're willing to share it with us. I was just looking at art galleries. I was going around to art galleries, say high school art exhibits and community art galleries. Town Hall down in Saranac Lake had a nice art exhibit of the students' artwork. There was a great exhibit this spring at the Creative Spirit Gallery in Potsdam where the high school students of the Potsdam Central School District had their art on display. I was there, as I said before, at the St. Lawrence County Arts Council's gallery there in Potsdam. And I would see pieces of artwork that they had this something about them that was, with the beauty of it, it was the theme a lot of times. See, these families of animals that looked like they were just enjoying life as, nature intended. This healthful, happy family, like that wolf family of yours there, and the robin families and the pair of cardinals that I recall. Those and that fawn, the fawn lying there in the leaves of the forest, it just seemed like there was this healthy, happy kind of aura to those paintings of yours and some of the other things I saw. This Michelle Peterson, she did this gorgeous painting of this Mother Nature face kind of blending into and coming out of the forest. And that really kind of caught my attention. And so I sought permission. I contacted you and these other artists, and it was just wonderful to have the permission granted to use the artwork in these brochures that we envisioned. I had never done a brochure before because I didn't have the artwork. Once this wonderful artwork was available, and I had all this text, all this knowledge, all this science that I'd been putting together for a long, long time, for decades. And so the brochures came really out of having that good connectedness with the artists of the region. And we have these beautiful brochures. Now, we have one on dioxin pollution prevention and dioxin exposure reduction. Focuses a lot on the open waste burning that has taken place throughout the U.S. and here in New York State for a very long time. That was an issue that we've been long active on. The other brochure that I've completed so far is on exhaust and people's need to recognize that there's nothing, it's very unhelpful to casually expose oneself to, just how present in the concentrated exhaust cloud from a nearby operating gas or diesel engine. That's a considerable dose of benzene and formaldehyde and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and particulates. All those chemicals that I just named are known human carcinogens. So it's our approach is to find the appealing, attractive vehicle, the brochure, the poster, the flyer, the three-ply display, panel board with I put your paintings right on that to kind of just draw people in and have them, get thinking there's a good vibe here and it's beauty and positivity and love of the earth and all these things. And then we have this scientific information that we provide about what causes cancer, how to avoid exposure to that pollutant that's in the environment, whether it's in our food or our air or our water. And then to take action further, which is really the ultimate goal for us, for Cancer Action New York, is to minimize the release of pollution that causes cancer, these pollutant carcinogens, into the environment. That's where we'd really like to get to fast. But in the meantime, we just feel like it's so needed to educate people about how they can avoid exposure and reduce their cancer risk. There are very high cancer rates in our part of New York State here in the North Country. There are high cancer rates down on Long Island. Throughout New York State, really, the Northeast has higher cancer rates than most of the rest of the U.S. We've concluded that that's a lot to do with being downwind from all of the emissions of the rest of the country. We're downwind from it, and air pollution is certainly a significant factor in causing cancer, especially lung cancer. And we have high lung cancer rates here. We have cigarette smoking, which is certainly part of the pollution that causes cancer. but it's only part of the pollution, and it's not the only environmental pollutants. It's one of the many, many environmental pollutants that are carcinogenic. So I just want to, every once in a while, say honor to Tom Gagin for helping us, you know, get better situated and stronger in doing what we're doing. I just have all these questions for you. What's your thinking, Tom, on the relationship between people and the earth? You've said some of that, you've given us some of that, but I get the feeling you've got more there. Is there anything you want to add about your thinking about, you know, what people need to change into, you know, how art and education can lead them there, you know, what relationship we have now and, you know, what relationship can we have in the future?
Yeah, well, you just mentioned about the work you want to do to see that people don't ingest pollutants. But recently I have heard the CEO of ExxonMobil say that he wants to be present when the last drop of oil is extracted from the planet, which means that ExxonMobil and other polluting criminal organizations are not going to go easy, and they will stand for the destruction of countries like Nigeria and several other places, especially in third world Africa, South America, in order to make their profits. And if people, it's pretty common knowledge among reputable scientists that the amount of pollution that's already in the air, which is 387 parts per million, far exceeds the 350 parts per million that is deemed to be the tipping point past which environmental degradation cannot be stopped. So people on this planet are already over the line. That's what they were hoping with the Copenhagen conference, to get that number back to 350. But there's no way the people on this planet... See, the thing is, it seems to me that every organism, when it's part of its function is to dominate its surroundings, survival of the fittest, and to survive, the main focus of most organisms is not an altruistic one. It's to make sure that they themselves remain viable and reproduce and pass on their genetic material. People are the same thing as like plants, animals, and everything else. Except that the difference to me is that people can see the damage that they are doing. I mean, everybody in the world has seen the pictures of the pollution in Beijing. They've seen the copper mines in Montana. They've seen the mountaintop removal in Kentucky. We are creating garbage, and the thing is, we have run out of space for that garbage. So what we're doing is we're creating a bigger and bigger garbage pile that we are now living in, because there is no escape from that. And some scientists think now that no matter what anybody on this planet does, I mean, it's a foregone conclusion that species on the Earth have come and gone. And to many scientists, the human species is in a process of going. Since the last ice age, it was which was like 10,000 years ago. The period that we're living in now is one of unusual ability to foster growth. But what humans have done is run out and have like dominated the material of the planet, treating it as objects, including other animals, of the human beings, of the plant life, treating everything as an object. to be consumed or manipulated. And what's happening now, that it used to be okay for a while because we never knew about the consequences of our industrialization, militarization, and all that stuff. But now everybody does. But it seems to me and to many other scientists that we are just about, we're on that road, that slippery slope to killing ourselves. So as an artist, what I do sometimes is what I'm talking about now, when I look at something, I want to either to show people what's going to be gone, like the little bird or whatever, the little wolves and stuff, or just to remind myself how beautiful this planet was at one time and probably will not be that beautiful again.
It is so painful and just so, so kind of sad in a way that we've gone as far as we've gone. And then what you say about some of us, like this CEO of ExxonMobil, continuing to just be this very exploitive, very brutal, very intent upon just satisfying greed kind of guy, I struggle with it. I think to myself, no time in the previous history that I'm aware of has any powerful part of a society given up its power without being forced to give up that power. And yet I truly don't believe in violence, and I don't want to force these corporate overlords, these people that have a lot of huge amount of power in our country, more than what most people realize, basically run the country, all this huge amount of power, and they don't want to give it up. They like it like that. They're just the kind of people that feel that power is their due and that they like what they do, and I don't think any of them are into repetitive of this or, you know, changing their ways to a very large extent. They like it. That's just them. And there's other people that don't like that and want to have a healthy earth and share and be more of these kind of people that are in harmony with nature and the other human beings. But so what do you do? You know, how do we get the power from them? That's what it all comes down to. If they keep holding onto the power, they're going to run the show. It's just, that's the way it always is, you know.
Yeah, but the thing is, they have blind spots, too. For example, if the guy is going to pump till the last drop of oil, I mean, the ordinary people, the 6 billion as opposed to maybe the 1 million who control everything, the 6 billion people are not going to tolerate international borders, they're not going to tolerate the chemical fires that are being, you know, burnt all the time. Sooner or later, the people are going to be ahead of those people, and the only way things have stopped in the past is through violence. And the unions, all the strikes and all of that stuff. But to see what the elite do is every once in a while they throw a bone to the, you know, the dog there and like shut them up for a while and hope to distract them. But the thing is, there's no more room for expansion. Capitalism depends on continually expanding markets. And the younger people now are living with a terror that I never grew up with. I mean, the existence of our whole planet is seriously being called into question right now. And the people my age, I'm 65, a lot of them are just like, well, I'm not going to be around for when it, you know, finally collapses, so what do I care? But it's precisely people of my age who have the time and money to do something about whatever this is. If we are to defeat the guy from ExxonMobil or, you know, whoever he's a surrogate for, we are going to have to, each person alive who has the ability, most people are just able to go to work, come home, take care of the kids, do their chores, watch TV, go to bed, and get up and go to work and go to this and all this, and they're so run frazzled by this increasing in the need for productivity, which means, like, you know, much more stress on individuals, that they are effectively silenced by the power that's running the place. But people like me and people who are now out of that need to make money and all of that stuff, people like my age and people in college age or right out of college age before they've actually gone into the whole system, those are the two age groups, it seems to me, who would be able to do the most work. And from my perspective, I think that every person of my age who has not been totally demoralized by a life of disappointing, watching things deteriorate more and more as time goes on, and people who have not given up that fight, they can do something about it. Whenever in history changes have been made, it has been made by masses of people. And the people who control stuff, they're not really even people. They're like mental defectives who cannot see the results of their own. They can't see past their own nose. They can't see what they're doing. Or if they do see, they don't care. To them, people are another resource, just like a drop of oil to be burnt up and used up and exploited for their own pleasure and benefit. However, with the rise of the smaller globe through internet, through communications, through all of that, we can see what's going on right now in all over the world. The phone cameras show us everything that's going on everywhere. And we're seeing that the people in the third world countries are seeing the commercials that are played on American TV, and they're saying, who is that guy to be driving around in that SUV coming home to that split-level ranch house with carpets all over the floor and all of this stuff, what we call the American dream? And they're only for, like, a minuscule proportion of the population of the planet. So what we do is keep those other part of the 6 billion down through malnutrition, disease, all of that stuff. So I don't really know, you know. It seems to me that I think that part of the human's ability is problem solving. And the thing is that happened, though, that was that as they solve a particular problem, that very solution causes another problem, which then has to be solved. I mean, oil is great to burn because, you know, and if it's 40 degrees below zero, you need to be warm.
Right.
And there's no getting around that. But the thing is, the kids now have much more intercommunication with each other and have seen that there are wind alternatives, there are geothermal alternatives. There are a lot of alternatives. The only thing is, you got to kick those suckers off that perch that they're on. And hopefully kick them off before they have, like, you know, polluted the whole planet to non-existence.
Sometimes I have this hope, this kind of this way of looking at this, that if, say, the people that are good at doing alternative energy, if they just do their best, my father's always saying, just do your best. And so I try to follow that example, and so I try to do my best with this cancer prevention education that focuses on reducing people's exposure to pollution that causes cancer, which is such a big part of what causes cancer. And I just feel that if we're all doing our best, you're doing your best painting, everybody's doing their best, it's these good people, this among among good spirits and good people, everything's all right, that then will be such a great example that it'll almost make the corporate kings, this bad, negative, damaging, exploitive part of the earth, become irrelevant in a certain kind of way, because they just won't matter to anybody that's, you know, really going where the things will hopefully go in restoring our relationship with the earth and restoring the healthfulness of the earth. So who knows, maybe just by us doing really well and it's kind of all flowing smoothly together amongst these good people.
I don't think so, Don. I think those people, I was at one point, I was in the Prudential Building in Boston, up on the top floor there. They have the what they call the war room, where the stockbrokers and corporate people are, and you can see these all over the walls, these maps of how people like you and me and all of that are being manipulated, and they have absolutely no ability to recognize. I mean, they're not even like people. They're like some kind of an aberration, a caricature of what a human being is. Those people couldn't care less. They'd step right over you on the ground if they saw you throwing up on the, you know, with your cancer or whatever you got. They'd just use you as a foot mat to wash the garbage off their shoes and continue to go right the way they want to go. They have no ability to recognize kindred people. I mean, all through history, what people have been saying was, you know, well, if we do our best and blah, 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 then they'll, sooner or later they'll be either shamed into changing behavior or whatever. Some mysterious thing is going to change these people's minds. But I think we have to look at these not as people. They are not real human beings. They're like degenerates of some kind. And I think we should have to, you know, it's like a mental illness, I believe.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's totally true. But what should we do? You know, what should we do? I guess two of them, what should we do with them, or in connection to them, or, you know, can we just can't let them just keep doing their thing. If they just keep doing their thing and we keep doing our thing, then they'll just ruin everything.
That's right. Well, they're looking at, what their, program is continually to insulate themselves from the effects of what they do and other people on this planet. I mean, they're looking seriously at, you know, colony on the moon and stuff like that. And, you know, you're not going there. That's for Dick Cheney and his group is going there, you know. So the thing about what actually do you do, what you actually do is what you want to do. For example, you're doing the cancer thing, and I'm doing what I do, and you can't really have an effect. Let's see. The only thing you can control is what you do.
Yep, I agree with that totally.
Okay, so now here we are talking on the telephone because of what you do. You brought me into the circle of what you do, right?
Yep.
Okay, and I was not aware of your existence. You were not aware of my existence. If anybody listens to this radio thing, they will also know that I exist and that you exist.
Right.
Right? Through the broadcast. The process is extremely slow, but what people can do is take individual action by, like, standing outside the White House, telling Obama to get off the club set that he's in there with, and, you know, all the different kinds of things. You can... writing to, like, you know, the thing about how you're going to defeat lobbyists for drug companies or oil companies, or you have to be able to overpower them. And the only thing that the regular people have is numbers.
Numbers. Yeah.
That's the only thing they have. We have, and also dedication. But to tell you the truth, I'm not really optimistic about any of this because I've been doing stuff like this all my life, and I have not seen a real betterment of, you know, of the world since I was born. I was blaming my father and his generation for leaving us the mess that they left us. And now our kids are blaming us for leaving them the garbage that we're leaving them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
What
do you do? Okay, you can. What you can do is you can either say, well, that's the way it is, and just go along and, you know, get the most enjoyment out of life that you can. Or you can realize that part of the enjoyment of life is the struggle, is the enemy is good for you personally because you're constantly tested against something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Some people think of it as good or evil or positive, negative, or whatever that is. But what keeps people alive and functioning best is some kind of tension. If everything were idyllic and all of that, we would not be as strong as we are.
That's true.
Right. And so in a way, we owe part of our elan, part of our life, you know, enjoyment of life to the people and the things that keep us strong. The only problem with this is, like everything that I say, that I'm at the same time thinking of its direct opposite.
Exactly.
And
yep.
Its direct opposite is equally true of everything I'm saying.
Yeah.
And everything you say is an understatement of what is reality. And reality is far more complex than I have ever thought about.
Exactly.
I don't know how people in China really think, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. But what do we do? What we do is we are in our place and we do what we do, and that's all we can do. And the species, to me, is on its way to extinction. And I do not really think that there is too much you can do to stop it. Unless people become so desperate that, like in the Second World War, they converted Ford cars to Jeeps in about 2 weeks. They geared up to do the whole thing, and everybody in the country was behind a single idea, and everybody did it, and nobody bitched about it, and everybody was down. But the problem with that is that was facing an external enemy. What we have to do is recognize that our external enemy are the people who are killing us, either by pollution or by overexploitation of what's around on the planet, or by lack of food genetically modified food, which I hear yesterday is like turning out to be not so healthy for a lot of people as they touted it to be.
Yeah.
We have to steal the seeds from that Arthur Daniel Midland. We have to shut down the companies that are like throwing tops of mountains on top of people's cabins in Appalachia. We have to do that. And anybody who does do that, they're going to get torn up by the system, but maybe it's worth it. To some people, it is worth it. And
yeah,
if it is worth it to you, do it.
Yeah, I truly think about those kind of things. And the thing that I seem to be most intent upon being an obstacle to, and, you know, working, you know, endless, you know, strongly as forever to brain into is this tar sands thing. But the tar sands there in Alberta, and, you know, just all the horrible excessive amounts of pollution that are resulting, air pollution and water pollution in particular, from the tar sands exploitation and then, you know, getting our gasoline and diesel fuel by that route. I feel like that's something that I just will not let be. You know, I probably there should be other things that, you know, one decides they will not let be, like, say, the chemical industries and their hazardous waste incineration and all these various things. But I've kind of settled upon the tar sands as my great battle. And I'm intent upon adding that on to the cancer prevention, because it fits really well with the cancer prevention education. I do some of each, and just push hard on bringing it into these tar sands. And so that'll be exciting. Like you say, it's a great challenge. It's a part it would have never been as strong without trying to do something like that. And so that's, like, there's a certain way that's good. But I truly also think how wonderful it would have been to have lived in a time when everybody, rather than liking material things, just loved getting all the education they could, wanted to do all the reading they could, wanted all their time for appreciating beauty and doing artwork. And sure, there's, you know, this need to produce food and have shelter. But if we minimize that, if we just kind of kept that as small as possible, we would have so much more of our life for these beautiful things. And it would have been wonderful to live during a time when that was like way everybody was. I'm sure we'd have been just so different. And I think that I might have preferred that to being strong in all truthfulness.
Yeah, but when was that time? I never heard of a time like that ever in history.
It's never been. No. Never been. But I wish it could have been that way the one time I was alive.
Oh. Yeah, but I think you'd get bored, maybe.
I don't think so. I can think of a million wonderful, beautiful things to do, you know, that I'd like to just be able to do with other people, you know, and rather than just this fighting stuff and this stress stuff and this. You know, for so long.
Yeah, but your human nature is part of your human nature. Part of that survival of the fittest thing is the aggressive part.
That's true.
Of you.
That's true.
Yeah. The only thing is that we're turning the aggression, we're turning on ourselves now. For example, like in the world right now, when you watch the news, if people are totally, like, way too aggressive. I mean, they're over the top with aggression. That's all you see on the newspaper is aggression.
Yep.
So that probably is either as a result of mistreatment of the human being,
probably that,
or people like aggression. I mean, that's it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That.
It's part of that survival of the fittest thing,
yep.
which we have figured out all technological solutions to problems, and we're way more advanced intellectually and technologically than we are humanistically.
Yeah.
Our personality has grown faster in ways to be aggressive and negative than it has in ways to be positive.
Yeah. I think another thing that's involved, too, there's certainly more and more science and research being done and published on the connections between pollution and these behavioral and mental type disorders and problems. Some of the aggression that we're seeing, well, I've seen studies that reported that people that have been exposed to lead in their childhood end up being in prison because of their aggressiveness and their, you know, lack of ability to behave in a civil, kind of lawful manner. There's certainly a large connection between the endocrine disruption. If people's hormones are right, you know, that's such a down, kind of damaging global part of your personality to have, you know, not working right. So I can just see all kind of potential for people's antisocial behaviors and their aggressiveness and their, you know, this thing that you mentioned, you know, kind of you touched on it, this thing of being mistreated. People that are mistreated, dogs that are mistreated are aggressive and, you know, vicious and all these things. And when people just keep getting kicked in the face for, you know, just trying to take care of their family and make a living and have a life and just enjoy the little bit of the nature that's left, and just keep getting kind of stressed out and to some degree beat up for that because they're just always being pressured to do more just mindless, meaningless work just to survive, pay higher, you know, gasoline prices and, you know, pay higher rents and buy more expensive drugs and all this stuff. I can see why people are aggressive and just plain mean. I'm meaner than I used to be. My brother's meaner than he used to be. We're all meaner than we used to be because it's been so just damn unpleasant. It's a big party.
So listen, when you talk about the behavioral component of mistreatment, like I said before, I was a special ed teacher in Brooklyn, New York, in the inner city ghetto hood type thing for 35 years. And I have realized that if you want somebody to do something, you know, if you want to change somebody's behavior, you have to make it evident to the person that it's in their best interest to do it.
Yes.
In other words, we have tried beating them up. We've tried strapping them down. We've tried locking them up. None of this is going to work. I mean, all it does is produce enrage. It produces rage.
Yep.
Now, here's the guy, the Exxon Mobil guy and all of that. We want to change that person's behavior. Like you're saying, how do you go about doing this? Well, I know that from my teaching experience, most of which was changing behavior. That was real. The job that I had to do was changing kids' behavior. There were kids who were sent by court and jail and all kinds of stuff like that. But applying that same theory, I came to find out that what you have to do in order to get anybody's behavior to change is to prove to them that the result of the change you want will be better for them. So instead of shooting the guy in ExxonMobil, what we want to do is convince him that he will be a better off as a person if he goes along with the program of getting his boot off the neck of everybody else on the planet.
So true.
instead of confronting his criminality with aggression, because we know aggression doesn't work, I found that out. How do we go about convincing the guy who's in control, J.D. Rockefeller and all his boys and all the people from the Harvard Club and all the people in the Fortune 500 Club, how do we convince them that it's better for them to not take their $20 billion bonus every Christmas? How do we convince them that it's better for them to take their $20 billion bonus and spread it out over the population of the city or community in which they live?
I know what would happen.
In history, this has happened. Among Aboriginal societies, or several of them, the biggest man in the tribe or the group was not the person who owned everything. It was the person who gave the most out, because that proved that guy was the best hunter or the best, he was respected not for what he owned, but for what he could do for the community. And I think those people who were that big man in the small communities, they got more out of life than the guy who has the 200,000 foot yacht outside of, because he's on that yacht by himself.
So,
and that guy, if anything ever happened, I mean, there are times like in a catastrophe, like 9/11 and just times like that, that none of that crap matters.
Right.
What he's got, who he is, because he's a guy scared shitless trying to get out of that building himself. You know? So what we want to do is convince that guy to live like that all the time. Recognize that the garbage that he's, the gold-plated faucet and toilet is not as good as the esteem he can engender in his fellow people.
Yep. Yeah, if people would value, say, their, like you say, their kind of the way other people feel toward them, like how much love do you get from the rest of your community that's all around you? They value that. If people would rise spiritually, if people would rise and just want to be a good person, just a simple thing like that, this would all be different. It would truly be a wonderful change. And these people that do have the power now would want to share it because they were good-hearted, if they could possibly change that much. And they would want to be loved by their fellow, Americans, rather than hated by them and just considered to be the source of all awful things that are happening to us in this kind of environmental degradation, pollution, disease kind of part of what we realize is reality. If they really wanted to reconcile with the rest of their species and get it going right with just being full of love and mindfulness and spirituality, that's really beautiful. And they, you know, it's certainly, you know, there as a kind of a appealing, attractive, you know, result for them. But I don't know. Hopefully, they're good enough. Like you say, if they're not, if they're deranged, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, but the thing is, circumstances are now. I mean, the whole United States has identified Bank of America, AIG, all that, certain people, not the people who work in the office. We're not talking about. We're talking about the people who are in charge of those things. Everybody now hates those people, especially with the size of the unemployment numbers that are around now. People now identify those people because it's on the TV every night. So when you get somebody who is driven by frustration of not being able to take care of his family and all of that, somebody's going to take a shot at these people. And maybe, I mean, maybe the fear thing will work. The advantage that elites have is that they can keep stuff quiet. They can deflect. They can insulate themselves and all that. But I don't think that's you know, since everybody knows that the thing is going down the tube, and like, you know, it's a little the things are getting a little more desperate, I think, because we have run out of room, we've run out of resources, and all we got now is people. And if there's 6 billion people, and there's 1 million of them, and 6 billion of us, and we don't give a shit about the immigration and all of that now, we're going to, you know, it doesn't matter what happens, there's thousands of people in detention because they dared to cross our borders and stuff like that, because they want to live like us. Well, I mean, you know, we are identifying to everybody the exact names and addresses of all of those people. You can get all of that information easily now. And I don't know if insulation will work. So maybe that's a ploy in educating the greedy person about, you know, maybe that's a ploy of how you get them convinced that it's in their interest to get up off that stuff that they own and control.
Yeah.
And the other part of it is the way the corporations work is that nobody is responsible. The United States Supreme Court gave the status of individuals to corporations a long time ago, where nobody in the corporation is really responsible for anything that goes on. And the primary purpose of a corporation is simply and strictly and only to generate as much profit for their stockholders as possible. That is counter to human feeling.
Exactly. It's counter to human existence.
That might change if enough of us identify enough of those people who are taking advantage of that.
Hopefully something's going to change, because I want to know, I believe in spirituality. I believe in being a spirit once I'm dead, you know, once I leave this, you know, this kind of life that we know about now. I want to be able to see improvement taking place and just know that, well, people, they proved they were better than what, you know, we thought they might be, and they are rising. I want to just be this, you know, I'm really hopeful that people are going to continue to rise, and it will be this. We'll fix this, you know, we'll get back in good relation with the earth, that we'll prevent the pollution, we'll, you know, be, you know, conserving and very little material interests, and just change so much it'll make us just cry, you know, for like joy that people are like that, you know, in the future. So I'm really hoping that something's going to turn out like that. I have one more brief thing I want to just talk with you about. We're doing these bulletin boards now, Tom, and your animal family paintings have been turned into a border of those, many of those paintings that you shared so many with us. We've made a border for our environmental health dedicated bulletin board space. We've got one at the Potsdam Library, Potsdam Public Library in Potsdam, New York. We have one at the Nature Storehouse, a food and, you know, supplements kind of place. This natural foods and these healthful kind of supplements and foods store in Canton, New York. We've got a bulletin board there. And we're just working on these bulletin boards, and we put these posters up that some of them are going to be using some of your paintings in the future. We're using some photos of open burning and a painting from some students down in Saranac Lake that depicts DNA. You know, DNA is our big thing with cancer prevention. We're trying to protect the DNA from being damaged and then caused to not function properly, which starts off the cancer cell. But to make this long story short, I just want you to know that your paintings are being used in these environmental health dedicated bulletin boards. Well, people go there and they're attracted by there by that beautiful artwork and those colors that you were mentioning. They're going to find these posters and this information, this scientific information that's been, you know, brought into the community for protecting the public health, basically telling people how to avoid exposure to pollution that exists in their everyday environment, and then how to prevent that pollution for the future generations. And what I'm, you know, coming to with this is, you know, do you think that with all that you and I, you can do, I can do, people you know can do, people I know can do, that are, you know, these good, caring, wanting to save the planet kind of men and women, is there any place for something like an environmental earth, environmental health festival, you know, that we could start doing once a year somewhere, say in the Adirondacks, you know, just do where we just get more and more people of this vibe together to dance, to share their artwork, to talk about, you know, what needs to be done to convince people that this is a better path than the greed and the, you know, the materialism and having this huge amount of stuff and no friends and, you know, no good community connection. Do you think there's any potential for an environmental art festival here in the North Country and the Adirondacks, you know, to, like, celebrate the Mother Earth and the good in people and the creativity and the beauty and the color and all that?
Well, I, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't really know about that. The festivals are good, but it's sort of like preaching to the converted already.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's you know, it's good to see that there are other people like yourself and that you're not just thinking these thoughts all by yourself. But if I were gonna start a festival or something like that, I would aim at the youngest people. I would aim at the elementary and high school kids and college kids. Those are the people who are going to have to live with the consequences of all this garbage who are leaving them.
Yep.
And at that age, I remember myself as being, like, very inarticulate and not really having formulated my ideas very well. So if for me, like, the householding group, which is, like, you know, age whatever, 25 to 50 or whatever that group is, it seems to me they would go to a festival as an entertainment. The younger group would go to a festival to formulate ideas and plan strategy.
That's good.
And the people my age and older or younger or whatever, some relatively, 60 to 90, 100 or whatever, could take part in that, not running it, but making it happen,
yep.
Making the things happen, you know, because the people my age are now out of the turmoil of the workforce, out of the turmoil of bringing up the family, out of the, you know, really not too many responsibilities that are imposed from outside. Responsibilities we have are ones we choose to have. And so if people my age saw that some event was going to occur that included the younger people help them articulate their own concerns, fears, hopes, strategies for the future, that would be good. The people in the middle, the householders, you know, 25 to 50, whatever, 55, they are totally stressed out, most of them. And they deserve, you know, the joy of being outdoors and with the hot dogs or whatever they have, or, you know, the games or whatever the amusements are. That's for them. So I think maybe a festival could work if we kept in mind that the idea is something at the end of it, not that everybody goes home and there's garbage all over the field, that some positive course of action is going to be decided at that very festival, right?
That'd be cool. Yeah, some kind of theme to it, you know, and some kind of planning that took place, and that's a good idea. Yeah.
If it's a work, to myself, I am no longer interested in anything but work.
Yeah.
Everything I do is work. I find the most enjoyment in life working.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just saying my opinion of it. Maybe other people's is different. But I would only go to something that I knew was going to result in a positive movement, a positive action, a one-day action or a two-day action or whatever, but something real, not BS.
Maybe we could have some workshops or something, you know, where people came and learned, say, how to write letters to their, you know, their representatives, or how to put pressure on them, or
good idea,
be a substitute for them, or whatever they have to do. And mm-hmm. to be, like you say, like maybe bring the college environmental groups and the high school environmental groups, and let them all do their thing and try to like get other people excited about joining into that. And it could be like this activist kind of
an activist thing. Yeah. Like, in other words, the younger people are always following these older people, and that's backwards now. It should be that the younger people will formulate their strategy and their little session and all of that. And what I would like to see is I would do something if they came up with a specific date, time, place, activity to do, that's what I would be interested in.
Yep.
And if you used a festival as a gathering place to formulate a concrete strategy or tactic or activity that's, you know, something that's going to come real out of it, not just everybody goes home feeling good that they're part of a group. I don't really care about socialized thing. I care about the actual what do we do tomorrow that is a direct result of what we did at this festival.
Well, it'd be kind of cool if it was like this stepwise thing. Like, we'd have one of these festivals every once in a while when something needed to get done, and then have another one once something needed to get it done again, and just kind of build it with these, kind of like these activism parties, basically, to kind of like, you know,
well,
get everybody together.
Well, it's a strategy session, mate. It's a planning session.
Yep.
Festival, in my mind, is like, you know, everybody goes, have a good time, listen to the music, watch the pictures, have a good time. But a good time to me is not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is the group from Potsdam University coming up with a thing of, let's go paint this house, guy's house blue or something, this idiot who doesn't know how to get off his, you know, whatever it is, and give to the community. You know what I mean? That's something I would do.
That'd be really cool. It'd just be this different kind of festival, you know, where there was the beauty and, you know, all this kind of, I love open mics, you know, just people sharing their performing skills. So you just kind of have that kind of festival going on. It's all focused on the earth and environmental health and environmental protection. And then you use it at this time when people come together, they plant something, and they do it. That'd be really cool.
Yeah. Well, okay, you can put me down for that.
You can put me down for it. We'll work on it together.
Sounds good,
Tom.
Okay.
Hope you have a great start off of 2010.
Okay, Don. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, we'll see you. You take care of yourself too. Bye.
Bye.